Please join me in welcoming Matt Carlin.
Best selling, I love that. Thank you. So let's first see if this works, Mary Fran. Ah, great. Hey, everyone. So my name is Matt Carlin. I am a partner in the law firm Foley & Lardner. I practice primarily in our Boston and New York offices. Came here this morning, so thank you for having me. I really appreciate it. As Mary Fran said, I am a partner in our information technology, or what we call now our technology transactions group. What that means is that I spend my days talking to CIOs and CSOs, chief privacy officers, chief security officers, general counsels, of course, legal teams, advising them on the commercialization of technology, as well as the use of technology in business. That has really developed now into a practice that probably focuses almost entirely on data and on security. And that leads me here today. So there's a lot of slides here. I don't intend to get through them all. There's a lot of checklists in here, some language you can use in your businesses, in your practices. There's a lot of tips you can take back and start implementing into your businesses. If you have any questions following today, you're more than welcome to call me or email me. And today we can have an interactive discussion if you want. If you've got questions during the presentation, I'm more than happy to answer them as we go along. So with that, you know, as Mary Fran said, why do we find, as lawyers, why do we find information security so important to a company? And here's a short list of some of the reasons why. So as a board member or as a C-level executive in a company, you have what we call in the law fiduciary duties to the company. What that means is that you have a duty to protect the business assets of the company. Well, one of the business assets of a company is data. And it's the data that you collect. It's the data about your customers. It's the data about your employees. It's all the data that you spend all day collecting through purchases on your website, through purchases at your stores. When a person walks into your hospital and they register for care, they give you all of that information. All of the information that flows through your businesses is data that you're collecting. And as C-level executives, and as a board member, you have a duty to protect that data. And not only do you have a duty, you have what we call a fiduciary duty, which means if you breach that duty to protect that data, what happens? People with an interest in the business actually have a claim against you. Perhaps you personally, but most certainly against the business. So if you're a public company, who are those people we're talking about? Those are your shareholders. If you're a privately held company, you also have shareholders. If you're a partnership, you have partners, and so on and so forth. So the primary objective here, and the primary objective when I advise folks like you, and when I advise boards, and we spend a lot of time these days talking to boards of directors of companies, boards of trustees of universities, boards of hospitals. We spend so much time talking to boards because lots of boards these days are scratching their heads. And they're saying, well, wait a second, there was just this security breach. The CIO got fired, right? Or the CEO is on the hot seat, or the board is contemplating firing the CEO because of this particular security breach. And they're all scratching their heads and they're saying, well, wait a second, what's my responsibility? How much do I have to know about the infrastructure, the security infrastructure of my company or of my hospital or of my partnership or whatever it is? And the answer is these days, you as a CEO or CFO or CIO or chief security officer or chief privacy officer or a member of the board of directors of your company have to know a hell of a lot. Now, that wasn't the case 5 or 6 years ago. Certainly wasn't the case 10 years ago, but is absolutely the case today. So why else do we care about information security? And there's a list here. Certainly we want to retain, we want to improve, we want to protect our reputation in the marketplace. Certainly we want to comply with those contractual obligations that you sign up for when you do deals, right? When you do inbound licensing deals or when you do outbound licensing deals. When you sell your product to the market, there's probably terms in there. When you buy a product from the market, there's probably terms in there that talk a hell of a lot about security and about data. Certainly you want to comply with those obligations. You want to avoid a public embarrassment. And you want to comply with the law. And we're going to talk a little bit about what the law has to say in this area. So what we did here was we put together a slide that essentially, I don't know what this is called, blocks out all of the information assets of a company. Now, you could probably think of others, but we compartmentalize all of the information assets of any company into something that looks like this. And I see you guys are taking pictures. You're welcome to take pictures of me. Hi. Of the slides, probably is what you're probably aiming your cameras at. You're going to get all these slides, so you're welcome to them. It's my pleasure to give them to you or make them available through wherever. But these are the information assets of a company. So when we draft contract language, when we go to boards and we present to boards about what we're trying to protect, when we commercialize our intellectual property in the market, when we accept data from consumers, when we accept data from employees, what is it that we're trying to protect? Something in one of these buckets. And all of the language and all of the focus we can really narrow down to protecting something in these nine squares. And I bet you could think of others, but for our purposes today, we're really focusing on these nine things. So let's take a little bit of a step back. And I love the next few slides. I get really into this stuff. And I like to talk about the state of the world. It's super fun for me. So the more security breaches that happen, the more money I make. So security breaches are fun for me, right? They're not so fun for all of you, but they're certainly fun for me. It's an area, I swear, I mean, knock on wood, it's an area that, you know, as you all suffer, we kind of are in the back room counting our cash. But so what's the state, I'm kidding. So what's the state of the world? In total, last year, a billion records compromised. Guys, a billion records that we know of compromised. A billion records that we know of compromised. An 81% increase from the prior year. Who knows what we're going to see in the reports that come out in January and February about this year. Probably another 81, 91, 101. We're talking about doubling that number on an annual basis. I will tell you, and I've been in meetings after meeting after meeting where companies like all of yours absolutely underestimate the impact of security breaches on the company. Absolutely, 100%. Every single time we'll get a phone call and a general counsel will say, my CIO just came in here and he told me there's been a breach. And I say, okay, well, what happened? He says, it's not that bad. Like, well, what does that mean? It's not that bad. Well, yeah, 10,000 data records. You know, 2 hours goes by. Well, it's still not that bad. You know, 100,000 data records, right? Maybe 2 more hours go by. It's like, oh my God, it's bad, right? 1.5 million data sets. Okay, so this is really what we're talking about, the state of the world when it comes from a cost when it comes to a cost perspective. The total cost of the global economy, we're talking in last year's dollars, was $400 billion. The cost of a U.S. breach in the United States is on average, it depends on the report that you read, but on average, $5.5 million to $7 million. That's what it's going to cost you to respond to the breach, to clean up the mess. The cost of each record compromised, $201, all in total dollars per record. These are the costs. These are enormous, and it's only getting worse. So the data breach that I like to talk about these days when it comes to board-level liability is the OPM case. Now, I recognize that OPM doesn't have a board as a private company would or a public company would, but nonetheless, I like to talk about it. And the reason why I like to talk about it is, one, it was enormous, or it is enormous, I should say. It's getting worse on a daily basis. Open the Wall Street Journal on any given day, and there's some article or some clip about something to do with OPM. And number three, this is where we saw collateral damage at the C level. So we saw the CIO get fired. She lost her job, and I don't know if she was actually called the CIO, but whoever the head of the IT was got fired. And we saw the CEO, and she's not called the CEO, whatever she's called, the director or whatever, is under an extraordinary amount of pressure and absolutely for a long time was hanging by a thread. That's where CIOs started to perk up. And that's where CEOs started to perk up and said, well, what's going on here? Why is the CIO losing his or her job? Why is the CEO losing his or her job, or at least being questioned about whether or not we should keep the CEO in his or her job? Why is this a topic at board meetings? Why are we now forming information technology or technology committees on boards of directors? Because what we're facing and what we're going to continue to face are lawsuits stemming from security breaches. Class action lawsuits, shareholder liability lawsuits, so on and so forth, that stem from security breaches and the security practices that your companies have. Lots of other examples there, and that list could be 50 slides long. So you ask, and I love this slide, what are the sources of security incidents? What are the sources? Why do security incidents happen? So I've separated this data. This is from the Verizon data breach report that came out a few months ago. I didn't do it. They did it. But they separated all of the security incidents that were reported in 2014, and then they bifurcated it and have a table on the right that shows all of the security incidents in 2014 that had a confirmed data breach. So a security incident could result in it could be a non-incident. There could be an example, and there are several examples where there actually isn't a security breach. Nonetheless, a security incident happened. So of all security incidents, what was the cause? Okay? What is that? I can't even read that. I think it says something like miscellaneous errors. Okay? Miscellaneous errors. What the heck is a miscellaneous error? A miscellaneous error is me leaving my computer on an airplane, right? And then arguing with the gate agent to let me back on the plane because my computer is tucked in the front thing. Now, that didn't happen today, I swear. That's a miscellaneous error, okay? Most of those, as you can see from here, so 30% of all security incidents are us doing stuff like that. Okay, but if you look at the right-hand side, where does miscellaneous errors fall? It's only 8.1% of miscellaneous errors actually lead to a security breach. And yet, how much time do all of you spend on your policies, on your tech policies, talking to employees and training employees about, you know, keeping their computers in locked cars or maybe not in cars altogether, right? Not leaving their computers on airplanes, you know, making sure their handheld devices are secure and they don't leave them in, you know, the back of the room in their briefcase. I didn't do that either. Things like that. How much time do you spend on that? Probably lots. All these policies. And yet, while most security incidents happen as a result of kind of our carelessness, our negligence, it only accounts for a very small portion of the security incidents that result in a security breach. Well, I think that says on the number on the top, point of sale, POS intrusions. Yeah. Point of sale intrusions, while a fraction, 0.7% of all security incidents, is where you should be spending most of your time because it's those incidents that actually lead to confirmed data breaches. And so a lot of times, and I'm not saying this applies to any of you or any of your companies, but a lot of times we spend our time doing the wrong thing. A lot of times we spend our time and you call me and you say, Matt, you know, I need the platinum tech policy, every rule of the road, and then I want to fly you out to wherever you are and I want you to train my 2,000 employees, right, on how not to lose their device. And I'm like, sure, I'll take your money. That's fine. I'm happy to do that, right? But it's really ineffective. I don't say the last part. I'll tell you. It's really ineffective, right? Because that's not where your focus should be. So what this slide is telling us is let's focus on the right-hand side. You know, let's focus on, you know, cyber espionage and point of sale intrusions and those types of things that are really what's disrupting your businesses and what's disrupting our environments. Another great, some more data here that really informs me. So what this data does for me is this data educates me on how I can counsel all of you. Because what my job is to, one of my jobs, is to make sure that my clients get steered in the right direction. And why? Because I can't prevent a security breach from happening at your company. I can't. That's kind of your job. I can't do that. Okay, but what I can do is make sure that if a security, or I should say when a security breach happens at your company, you don't get fired. And I can make sure your CEO doesn't get fired. And I can put together a story for you that is defensible, that you can present to your board to defend what your company did and how your company did it so that you don't lose your job, so that your CEO doesn't lose your job, and so that if there is a shareholder suit, if there is some kind of lawsuit resulting from the security breach, we have a defensible position and we can win the lawsuit. That's what I can do for you. And that's what really good tech and really good security lawyers can do for you. So who should be the most concerned in this room? I mean, you already know this, right? Anyone here work at a hospital? Yeah, you're toast. Anyone work at, I'm teasing, I'm gonna protect you. Anyone here work in a bank? Anyone here work in the government? Banking, government, pharmaceutical companies, hospitals, that's where our focus is primarily. Energy, okay, a little bit less so, anyone who accepts credit cards through a point of sale mechanism, you know, a swipe, a company like a Target, a Walmart, retail stores, that's where our focus is these days. And you can see that hospitals, healthcare entities are paying a lot more to protect their data in the event of a security breach and to respond to a security breach than, you know, some of the other industries. Okay, so again, what you're gonna do from a security perspective is you're gonna take all this data, I hope, and you're gonna say, okay, we are in this industry, and therefore our security infrastructure and what we do in our security infrastructure is gonna be narrowly tailored to meet where we fall on the spectrum. And again, what is that doing? It's building that story. It's making it defensible so that in the event of a security incident, we have a story to tell. Indirect costs of security risks. So everybody always asks me, how much does it cost? Like when we have a security breach, how much is this whole thing gonna charge or cost me? We spend, again, aligning our focus. We spend a lot of time working with you all on the red square, okay? The red square there, I think it says notification. Okay, we spend a lot of time negotiating contracts that talk about things like limitations of liability and warranties and indemnities for security breaches. And oftentimes, what that's focusing on is that little red square, which is a fraction of the total cost of a security incident. That's the cost of notification. So that's the cost, what it's gonna cost you. You're gonna pick up the phone, and you're gonna call somebody like me, and you're gonna say, we just had a security incident, and it impacted consumers in 6 states, and we are under an obligation, or will you tell us, are we under an obligation to notify those consumers in those 6 states? We're gonna then go review the security breach notification laws in those 6 states. We're gonna come back to you and we're gonna say, yes, you have to notify those consumers in those 6 states. We're gonna write a letter. Maybe you have to notify some other state agencies. Maybe you have to notify some credit bureaus, so on and so forth. We're gonna do all that for you. It's a fraction, and it's gonna cost you $50,000. That's a fraction, it's the red square of what the total breach is gonna cost you. What's the biggest one? The purple square, the loss of business. What can I do to help you there? Nothing. I can write a really good, you wouldn't hire me to do it. A public relations firm can write a really good press release, right? You can, put your goods on sale or something, or run an advertisement. I don't know what you do, but I can't help you there. And look at that. Most of the cost of a security breach is things that we can't help you with. Not many people can, okay? And yet our focus so often is on everything but that. Just interesting, interesting data. I'm gonna skip the next slide because we've kind of already talked about it. Data compromise, we like to get into the numbers and we talk about the numbers. This comes from, a lot of this data comes from that Verizon report, it comes from some other reports. I find it fascinating, and I find it scary for all of you. The time it takes to compromise a system. 38% of all data security incidents happen within seconds of the initial attack. 60% of them within minutes. The time it takes to extract data once somebody is inside, 28% of all security incidents, at least from the reports that I read, tells us that that happens within minutes, and yet, the time it takes to detect that that's happening from the reports that we read, a quarter of them take days or perhaps months to realize that it happened. I mean, this is really scary stuff. The phishing one is great. And I still can't believe this. Phishing attacks are insidious. They are running rampant these days. Why are they so prevalent? Right? Because they work. And the data tells us this. 23% of the people in your companies that get phishing emails open them. I mean, you're done. You're toast, right? 11% of those people open the attachments, right? So you get these emails. I mean, we get them every day, you know, that says, you just won $1 million. Oh, I did. It's great. You know, click here to open the attachment. You got to fill out a form. So you open it. You just won $1 million. Of course you're going to open it, right? And people, it's conditioning people to understand why you don't do that, why you don't take that action is harder than, I mean, we're all smart people in this room. We, of course, don't do it, but so many people do. And it's a huge problem. It's certainly something that we're going to have to address in the future. I like to talk a lot about myths. Because what happens is I walk into a board meeting and I have to talk about myths because I hear them all the time. I was at a board meeting, it was before our last conference, and it was at a manufacturing company in the Midwest, the largest maker of a product that if I told you, you'd know who it was. And I'm at a board meeting, and these are like all these old, stodgy, you know, white-haired Midwestern people, right? And they want to talk about numbers, and they want to get into, you know, the how we're doing this quarter, and what are we going to tell the street next quarter, and the CFO's report, of course, has to be the most important thing. And the general counsel, who used to actually be a partner at my law firm, invited me to give my spiel about what this company needs to do about security. And we have a CIO, and we have a chief privacy officer, we have a chief security officer. They're all very bright. They know what they're doing. But he wanted the board to understand what the framework was and why we think this is so important. And he said to me, so I get into my spiel, and I'm on my soapbox, and I'm doing my thing, and I'm having a great time. And a board member, very, very, very smart individual, speaks out, cuts me off. And he said, Matt, we're a blank manufacturer, something all of you own, at least one of. Why do we care about data? And I'm like, oh, geez. Okay. I don't even know what to do with that. So that having that conversation and educating, I mean, we all know it's important, right? But you'd be so surprised if you're out there, like we are, working with these companies, you'd be so surprised the barriers we have to informing companies about why data and why security is important. So they say, a lot of people like to say, it's all about the data. Your infrastructure, your data security protocols, everything you do should be focused on data. Not true, myth number one. It's also about security. It's about security of systems. Okay? It's also about not just the data itself, but keeping that data secure. So they say, okay, myth number two, it's all about privacy. Well, privacy, folks, is just a subset of security. Okay? Privacy, keeping something private, is just a subset of an overall security framework for a company. So people say, all I'm going to focus on is keeping things confidential. Okay? Keeping things confidential and keeping data confidential is critical. Of course you have to keep it confidential. You're under contractual obligations to keep it confidential. You're under obligations to your employees and your customers to keep their data confidential. But it's not just about confidentiality. It's also about the integrity of that data, keeping that data in the form in which you received it, and making that data available, making access to that data available oftentimes to whoever the owner of that data is. If it's my data and I go to a store and I buy something, you don't own the data I give you. I own the data I give you. Okay, you can use it for a variety of different purposes, but ultimately you have to make it available to me. Same thing with employees. Okay, I love the next one. You know, to be a hacker, you must be a technology genius. Nothing is farther from the truth. That being said, a lot of hackers are technology geniuses. But to be a hacker, you absolutely don't have to be a technology genius. And myth number five, you know, you guys must love this one. Ah, we don't care about data. It's an IT issue. Right? Give it to the CIO. It's his or her job, right? No, not true. right? A company collects data in many different areas of the company. With the CIO, one of the jobs of the CIO is to make sure that we have an infrastructure that supports the privacy, the security, the confidentiality of that data. But it's everybody, the data and the security of data, the privacy of data and the confidentiality of data is everybody's job. Myth number six, I can achieve, or I need more often, 100% security. No, you can't. Impossible. Okay? Impossible because you'll never have enough money to do it. And also impossible from a usability perspective. We all know that as security protocols increase, what happens to usability? Productivity, efficiency, it comes down. So if I'm an employee of your company and you have a security infrastructure that says I have to go through 17 different layers to open up a document, okay, what happens? We all scream bloody murder, right? We don't want that. And yet your viewpoint is, well, that's the only way to achieve 100% security. So not only do we have a budget issue, not only can't we afford 100% security, but your employees won't tolerate 100% security because in order to implement 100% security, you have to do things that make them less efficient, that make it impossible or have barriers to them performing their jobs efficiently. Myth number seven, I've called it myth number six. This is my example, that's an error, I apologize. This is my example of the board meeting that I was in a few weeks ago. I'm safe, I have great security, I don't need new security. We did this last year, we don't need to do it this year, let's do it next year, right? We already did this, we already went through this. We budgeted for that in 2013, we'll do it again in 2017, right? Y'all know, y'all shaking your heads. That doesn't work. So I'm not going to spend too much time educating all of you on this. You already know this. And again, this goes to one of those focal points that I already told you. I don't think we should spend an enormous amount of time on that being said. It's not unimportant. So what are the security rules of the road? We all use personal electronic devices these days. Y'all familiar with bring your own device? You know, Mary Fran, I'm going to say it. We like, in my business, we call this bring your own disaster, right? BYOD is a disruptor to good security infrastructure. BYOD is the root of, I can't even tell you how many problems. Okay, it is an absolute disruption to what we do. I love it. It's a huge fee generator. But if I owned a business, I'd really struggle with it. If I were a CIO or a CEO, I'd do it because that's what our employees are demanding, but it wouldn't come easy to me. And it wouldn't come easy because those devices are practically impossible to protect. And so many of the issues that we see in the press, so many of the issues that the daily phone calls that you get from employees stem from the fact that your personal computer is now your work computer, and the overlapping between the two. Nobody wants to carry two devices, okay? Nobody, okay? Presidential candidates included. Nobody wants to carry two devices, okay? I get her pain, I do. Who the hell wants to carry two devices, right? She wanted one device, I get it, it makes perfect sense. But the problems that arise are absolutely enormous. So here's the other thing. People don't realize that as you use your personal device, so your phone, your computer, your tablet, whatever it is, people become more relaxed with their personal devices than they are with their work devices. And so when you cross that line, you don't become more secure or more interested in the security of the device. You actually go the other way. You become less interested. You know, when your kid is playing on your iPad that you also use for work, right? We all do that. Or you've got personal photos on your phone that you're also using for work. I mean, we all do this stuff. And it all stems, and so many of these security issues stem from BYOD. And BYOD is another topic for another day. I could talk for hours about it. You all know the rest of what's on this slide. You can draft security policies that are consistent with and in line with those rules. So now that you all have a drink, let's talk a little bit about Ashley Madison, right? My favorite topic. So The reason why I love to talk about Ashley Madison has nothing to do with my account, my personal account on Ashley Madison. The reason I like to talk about Ashley Madison is because of why Ashley Madison happened. Okay? Ashley Madison opens up a whole new world of security issues. And a lot of folks don't know this unless you've kind of seen the stories and read the stuff that I've read. You all know what Ashley Madison is, lots of records, so on and so forth. The site was attacked by a hacker team that called themselves the Impact Team. So years ago, what happened, right? You remember the TJX data security breach. TJX was years ago. It was a super simple security breach. A couple people in a parking lot, I think, hacked into the system, got a lot of data, caused a lot of problems. Super simple, right? A couple kids probably, I don't remember, but probably a couple kids fooling around, making a mess of things, did a good job making a mess of things. You know, the proverbial you know what hit the fan. Okay, that simple. Okay. Juxtapose that against super sophisticated hacking, where you've got really professional hackers, okay, that are very, very, very bright, and they're hacking into your systems, they're doing the POS intrusions, they've got super sophisticated software that they're not buying off the shelf, they're creating it themselves, and trying to protect against that. They want your data, they want your customers' data, they want your employees' data. Why do they want that data? Because they want to sell it, right? Or they want to use it, right? They want to steal your identity, right? Ashley Madison was neither of those. So what was it? Okay, Ashley Madison is basically the birthplace of what we're calling hacktivism. Okay, hacktivism is a new term. What is hacktivism? Hacktivism is hackers who aren't two kids in a parking lot that just want to cause problems and aren't sophisticated hackers that want to steal your identity or sell your data. Hacktivists want to take down your site because they don't believe in what you're doing. A whole new world. So suddenly, if you're an Ashley Madison, there's lots of sites out there like Ashley Madison, okay? Or if you're, I don't know, a gun manufacturer, or if you're a cigarette manufacturer, if you're in the business of something that's controversial, you have a whole new group of people to worry about. People who don't want your data to sell it. They want your data because they want you out of business. And they will do anything they possibly can to make the public relations nightmare that ensues from their activities, their hacking activities, they will do anything they can to bring you down. And that's what happened with Ashley Madison. And that's why I think Ashley Madison is so incredibly important to this, to the framework, to what we're talking about these days, to thinking about how to protect companies. On top of which, it's just super fun and raunchy, and I just like saying it. So hackers, do we love hackers, or do we hate hackers? Okay, we are, I don't know, whatever you might love them, you might hate them. I will tell you this, we as a population are super, super interested in them. We spend a lot of time talking about, researching, thinking about hackers. I don't know if any of you saw this, but if you follow the Edward Snowden case, but there was a documentary called Citizen 4, and then the USA Network came out with something called Mr. Robot. And if you haven't seen it, it's really, really good. And it goes into this whole thing about really the operation of how hackers exploit people, how they get into our lives, how they've really become ingrained in our culture as data collectors, how we are at war with hackers, and the war against hacktivism and hackers generally. It's super, super interesting. But what USA Networks has done is they've made available all their data, which you can download, and that's where I got a bunch of the bullets on the next couple of pages, and you can read this on your own time. A couple of them are really, really interesting. They're telling us a lot about what we all think about security and about data and about social media and the use of social media. You know, I said earlier that bring your own device was the root of all our problems. That's not probably true. It's the root of a lot of our problems. Social media is the root of a lot of our problems, too. Texting. Instant messaging has always been an issue, but these things are really the root of a lot of evils and the root of a lot of causes of security problems and of weaknesses and disruptions in security infrastructures and what we're trying to protect against and what we're responding to. A lot of this stuff you can read on your own. You know, I think this is interesting. I have two young kids, and I loved the parenting bit. I mean, maybe some of you have children out there, particularly of young children, but almost twice as many parents wonder how much they know about their children's online behavior than wonder about their children's sex life. I mean, these are things like our parenting even is impacted by data and security, social media, things our children are doing that are going to subject them in their lives to risks that we never had. And a lot of this other stuff you can see.